This is Comedy Potpourri. I'm Paul.
And I'm Alan.
And today we're talking about Camelot. Whatever we'll come up with that. So we've talked a little bit before this, and wow, legend. I hate to compare it to other things in history, but it's just been built up on. I mean, the stories.
Is it a legend or is it a real thing? So like one of the things I saw earlier today, right? So guys are talking about archaeology, one of these predominant guys.
Right.
Not the guy that went to Glastonbury.
Right.
Oh, I should mention right now, we're going to be wood. Word butchers today when it comes to some of the pronunciations of the names.
Oh, yeah. We don't speak Welsh, we don't speak Irish, and we don't speak Old English.
I speak drunk American. How about that? That's usually what I go by most of the time. But there was a couple of archaeologists that were talking. It's like if Troy, which was initially considered to be a fictitious area in Turkey, actually is an actual city, which they found.
1963, I believe.
Yeah. Then there's a good possibility that the idea could transpose to another place, such as Camelot, which has always been talked about in legend. But did it actually exist? And there are some stuff that seems to suggest that. Now, I haven't gotten through some of the other History Channel stuff or whatever to read notes on it, but there definitely seems to be some good evidence to support that.
It's interesting. One of the things that we'll look at is a lot of people think that it happened during the Middle Ages, that when they had knights with shining armor and all this stuff, where it was basically during the British Roman time.
Well, and that's not accurate. I mean, here we go. You know, it's when did the Dark Ages start? That's in what, the 1400s or something like that, I think.
It's before. What happened? We're talking about before the Dark Ages.
Exactly. So the time that they always talk about Arthur is like about 500 years AD.
Yeah.
In Brittany, you know, or England.
Yeah.
Right? And they always talk about how they were hugely influenced by the Romans and how Rome had made their Holy Roman Empire. Actually, that's much, much later. But the Roman Empire spread its wings out into the greater area of Europe. Both France and England, Scotland, maybe a little bit of Ireland, perhaps. There's only like a 20-mile gap between the shortest area between Northern Ireland and Scotland.
Scotland?
But there's a... But they don't make anything this big because there's a huge trough where they dropped a bunch of munitions into it, so they won't make a tunnel like they do between England and France.
Wow.
These munitions also have chemical munitions as well. And it's like, are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
I found out about that just recently. But anyway, 500 AD. Bam.
So some of the things came out that was like... The Lancelot, the knight of the cart, way early, like about 1100. A lot of the stories started out like 1100.
Yeah, so there was lots of little talk about a bunch of this stuff, and it seemed to be that the main proponent that really brought the idea of Arthur, who may have been a fairly well-renowned chieftain in that area that would have been born. This guy by, what was it, Jeremiah the Monmouth, I think, or something?
Okay, yeah.
During the time, he had actually started writing a bunch of stuff.
No, how about Geoffrey?
Geoffrey of Monmouth. Sorry. Terrible. I'm sorry. I'm a bad man today. When I switch over from doing artwork and stuff like that, when I'm really focused on stuff, it's hard to transfer back into, I need to go back to reality. Yeah, I've been digging ink and stuff.
I just want to know how a giraffe became king.
Well, you know. Toys R Us. Geoffrey.
Geoffrey.
Geoffrey of Monmouth. He's a giraffe? Oh, my God.
There's so many things that came up, like the Green Knight. This is supposed to be before that. Sir Gawain.
Oh,
the,
yeah.
The Green Knight. There's so many different things that came in.
Hey, here's a question for you. So how did you get into it? I'm just asking you that question. How did you get pulled in with Camelot? What was your
Camelot
introduction?
Camelot is, you know, it is. It's, I saw Excalibur.
Oh, the movie?
Yes.
Oh, John Borman's movie.
Oh.
Okay.
Did not follow the full truth, because it wasn't Morgan. It was Morgana. And there's nothing in what we read. I never read anything. It was Morgana. It was Morgan. Supposedly that was his sister or a relative.
I want to say half sister.
Half sister or something like that. Yeah. And then he tricked him into having sex, and then Mordred was born.
SEX, man, I tell you, that's
but it was a weird movie. I mean, for.
You know what one of my friends said about that movie?
What's that?
First time I was watching Excalibur for the first time over at my friend Dax's place, right? We're sitting in the living room, and his dad comes out of his bedroom and said, "It's a Hollywood first."
Yes.
Yes. Said, it's like, man, a knight getting it on in full armor. How does... Oh, man.
I got to tell you, the first thing about Arthur...
Yeah?
Not Camelot, but Arthur was the Sword in the Stone... Disney.
True. But you know what? I've never seen that. I've never seen the cartoon.
It's different.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. But, to bring that on further, they don't think that maybe it was a stone. It was actually placed in an anvil.
You know, that makes more sense to me. But there's some other things that talk about the idea of what Excalibur is.
Right. Excalibur is not the Sword in the Stone.
No. There has been talk... that the
rumors have it.
Rumors have it. Paul, have you heard that there's a possibility that the spear that pierced Christ's side on the hill at Calvary, that spearhead is actually built into what would eventually become Excalibur?
Oh, I didn't. Oh, wow.
There's some stuff that surrounds that idea that I've heard about, and it's like, so the Spear of Destiny actually might have been forged in the handle or the hilt of Excalibur.
Wow.
Leading to a much more, like, only a king could hold this thing, because Christ is always considered king of faith and so on, right? So I thought it's just like, that's one of the most bizarre things I could ever hear of. But it makes a lot more sense. It's like the reason why the Ratsies were going on their big occult things around the world, trying to find all these things like the Ark of the Covenant or...
The Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail or the Spear of Destiny. These things were sacred items.
But thanks to Indy.
Yep. Dun 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 dun. Yeah. So, I mean, but it makes a lot of sense that, like, they wanted to show this lineage continue on, right?
Yeah.
And so, but I had heard that story.
And then, well, the legend says that the Lady of the Lake gave him Excalibur. And then when he died, they have so many different knights. It was supposed to be Sir Gawain, Galahad, whoever it was supposed to be. It was one. There's like three or four of them, they say, that did it. And to throw it into the lake, and supposedly when they threw it, her hand came up and grabbed the hilt and then pulled it back down.
Which is actually one of the coolest effects in that movie, man.
Oh, it is.
It is like one of the coolest things. It's like, by today's standards, it's like, oh my God. But Morgana, who is she played by? Helen Mirren.
Oh, yes.
And I've got a picture of her. It's like, oh, yeah.
In her younger days, yes.
Man.
Even at this, even now.
Oh, she's still got it.
She's spunky.
She didn't take it from anybody. Actually, she is a female version of a knighted person.
She's a dame. Yeah.
Just like Dame Judi Dench.
And then I think...
what's her name? Maggie...
Yeah, Maggie Smith.
Yes, thank you.
and I think was, oh yeah, Diana Rigg.
Oh, she's a dame.
Towards her end of her career, she was not. She was knighted a dame.
And there's another one. Emma Peel.
Oh, all they can remember, all you can see is a friggin' black leather outfit. Skin tight, too.
Oh, there's some stuff there.
There wasn't latex back then. It was leather.
No, that was actual leather. And a corset.
Mm-hmm.
And she was in. She was infiltrating a thing called the Hellfire Club, if I remember from the Avengers.
Yes.
The British TV show, not the Marvel comic character.
No.
It always threw me off when it said, the Avengers were made in Britain? What?
Yes. Well, and then after her was, just a little side note. After her was
actually, we're going far side right now.
This, I can't remember her other woman, but she ended up being a Bond girl.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Paul's introduction was Excalibur. For me, it goes back a little earlier than that. Because I had seen bits and pieces of King Arthur being talked about. And during my time, one of the comic books I was reading, right, wasn't Prince Valiant. It's like, at the times of King Arthur, it's like, no, I wasn't reading Prince Valiant. It was boring as F, as far as I was concerned. But the thing that got me about this was I was reading a comic book that was coming out called Camelot 3000.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was a 12-issue maxi series. First time I'd ever seen Brian Boland's artwork.
Yeah.
And it talks about how the resting place for Arthur was in Glastonbury, right?
Right.
And so the writer, Mike Gold, I believe was the writer on that series, had just taken all these bits of myth and actually had incorporated it, and they had all this reintroductions of Arthur, Guinevere, Lancelot, and unfortunately that whole relationship again reared its head and caused another fall to take place.
Right.
But Britain needed Arthur. Well, went to town on that.
Oh my gosh. So as they were writing about him, again, there's some other people in history that they think they could have, they pulled some of the stuff from to give Arthur's legend, like Charlemagne.
Yes. Yeah, so
I mean, he had a round table.
De Mort d'Arthur, or of The Death of Arthur.
The Death of Arthur.
Yeah, the writer.
Wasn't Tennyson, was it?
No.
He actually wrote about Camelot, too. There's a lot of...
Why am I seeing round table come up as far as pizza goes? I don't know. Sorry. It's actually, then, it's okay. Actually talked about here.
There actually is a musical called Camelot, and oh my God, there's some people in there that are pretty good. You know the guy who played the first Dumbledore?
Yeah, Richard Harris.
Richard Harris.
Yeah.
Actually was King Arthur, and he sang.
I actually saw that today.
Did you really?
Yeah, he was singing to Vanessa Redgrave.
Yes.
Who's supposed to be playing
Guinevere.
Guinevere. And Frank Nero plays Lancelot, but
right.
I didn't get to that part of it. The way they depict that movie, okay, 1967, which is as old as I, great. You've got him going through this whole wintry scene, and she's like in this hugely covered, I don't know what to call it. It's like bear fur or something. Polar bear, maybe. I don't know. Shame on those guys. But she's wearing this huge frock
right.
that is just like pure white
right.
and it showing the purity of Guinevere,
right.
I believe was
it's
the idea
be,
with
yeah.
the novel. Richard Harris is trying to woo her while they're outside of Camelot.
Right.
So this leads me to believe that the song that he's singing to her is before he marries her and trying to bring her to his side.
Right.
And I don't know... There's always talks about how Arthur brought all these knights after he'd been king.
Right.
Right. And bringing them to actual Camelot.
And what he did, the legend or the story, this is a story that actually is around there that they have, is that he, not necessarily him or the person that they think is Arthur, there are so many different, I want to say like, areas of England that had different kings and everything and knights, and they basically all came together, and he actually was fighting a lot during that time to take over land and to keep control. A lot of the Brits, they're natural Brits. It's very interesting because the Anglo-Saxons and everybody else was trying to get in. Here's this guy's basically very end of the Roman Britain time is actually taken over. That's when Rome actually backed out and he actually came in and took over because there's so much chaos. So he needed that. And then he wrote rules for the knights.
Rules of conduct, basically.
Rules of conduct, yeah.
And I think that was it. To me, it's kind of like one of my favorite comic book characters. Okay, he's an ideal. To put it in this way, Captain America, Steve Rogers, right? Captain America is an ideal soldier as well as he's an ideal man of conscience,
right?
And I think in a lot of ways, Arthur represents that for the Brits, and I think that by setting those standards, and of course this is being written by a guy who's in the clergy, right?
Right.
Okay, all these precepts. Unfortunately, those precepts are built upon by other precepts and more precepts and more precepts, as opposed to the golden rule. Do unto others as you would want them to do unto you.
Right.
And it's just like, well, that's pretty basic.
Just the story is sad because Guinevere ended up not being that pure. She ended up having an affair with Lancelot. I think she ended up marrying another king after he died and stuff. It was normal for that, but no, she had infidelity, which is, in that time, it was like they used to be killed for that.
Shame.
Shame, 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 shame.
I love it when, at least in the movie where he finds both of them out in the forest.
Yeah.
And he drives Excalibur right between the two of them.
Right.
And it's just like, oh my God. And then leaves. But, so like I say, I mean, I had gotten into that, and then I'd seen the movie Excalibur, and then I'd read bits and pieces about the idea of where this was all supposed to have taken place, where the idea of Camelot, which led to the idea that these guys would start researching, because they wanted to prove that actually, you know, this, the legends have some basis, as we were talking about the whole idea of Troy. So could they actually find it? And they started finding bits and pieces as far as I was...
Of Troy, yeah.
And they started finding bits of this other stuff.
So they're talking about Camelot. Would it be a wood structure or a... we would not call it a castle. It would be a stone structure.
It would probably be a battlement or an armament of something.
Right.
Probably something that was left over by the Romans would be my guess. I don't know exactly when Rome finally, if ever, actually totally left the British Isles and pulled all their stuff back into...
Well, that's when the Celtics came in drilling their ball.
And they drove it right to the key. Right to the hoop. Bam! And the Germanians and stuff like that, and the Gauls and stuff like that, the Romans had to fight off to get in there.
They had the gall to do that.
Oh. Bam. Paul. You know, but the whole concept of Camelot has hugely... If it isn't real, it has left such a lasting impression in everybody. In fact, I mean, it leaves an impression in music. It leaves it in literature.
Right.
T.H. White, White, who wrote that Once a Future King, talking about the Arthurian legends. I remember having to read about it, about Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh, yeah, that's...
How can you not talk about... Some call me... Tim? Ah, it's a bunch of coconuts. It's not a matter of where you're grasping it.
So there's been so many things. Oh my gosh, there's cartoons. we're talking about when the first one came, big story. I think it was, we said 11th century, but then there was a monastery or a, was it a monastery? What would they call it in England? Monastery?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. So they dug up, they said they dug up some bones in the middle of the church, and they found, supposedly found, two bodies in a carved out tree trunk, and there was a cross there, and in lead, it was written in Latin, and come to find out that they said it wrong, that it wasn't, it didn't say that. It said, here lies a chief or something of Roman Empire or something like that. And they mistook it to say that here lies Arthur and Guinevere, which...
How does that even...
They didn't. Their Latin was awful.
Somebody seems to have been watching the movie King Arthur that has Clive Owen and Keira Knightley in that.
Oh, yeah.
And Ion Gufford playing, well, Lancelot.
The thing is that it was proved wrong early, but they still have... Oh, they still have authoritarian things happen throughout the whole country.
Sir Arthur Mallory. Mallory's Lamort d'Arthur. That's the one that I was trying to remember as far as the name goes. A lot of that takes a lot of the Charlemagne stuff that we've talked about.
Right.
Which was very popular at the time and gave Arthur a background. And I think that builds upon Geoffrey of Monmouth, what he had already put down, and incorporated both the Charlemagne concept of Arthur and incorporated into what Geoffrey had already put down. I think they're separated by a couple centuries and stuff
right.
like that. But I find this such a, it's like a story that keeps building on itself.
It does. It just keeps on building and building. I mean, it goes from the 11th century, 15th century, 16th, 17th century. And then we're talking about, if you've ever read about the Knights Templars and their code of ethics. I mean, their code of ethics was, oh my God. I don't know how you could be pure in Knight Templar.
Yeah, Mallory actually says here is like in 1816 is when he wrote the De Mort d'Arthur, which was the basis for what his version of with the Charlemagne scenario.
Right.
So 19th century.
Yeah.
At this point, right? So every century there seems to be some additional thing that's being added to it as far as the myth is concerned.
Right.
But what about the actual place of Camelot itself? Now, from what I have read and heard, that there were three potential spots that they talked about. I don't know if you've got a list of that or not, but that's what I have come across. But every time that I was doing research on Camelot, it always comes right back to Arthur.
Arthur?
Or
the one with the... Never mind. I was going to be rude.
No.
The one with the ears?
Yeah, Sir Thomas Mallory. I should have saw that.
So they're thinking the high ground. They had high ground enclosure, causeway. This is at Birth Hill. Okay. And that's one of them, I think, because it has a pool next to it. And then it had an enclosure. And it had a causeway. And it was on top of a hill. Everything you'd want. But
you wanted in a battlement.
There are so many of those throughout England, and a lot of them were like the Romans built some of these and just let them go.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So they don't know.
Look what happened with Hadrian's Wall. That's to keep out the Scots. They just went around the backside of it.
That's right.
Which cracks me up.
Stop here.
The Golden Age of Camelot, achievements and triumphs. So I'm seeing here, like we've already talked about, the unifying of the realm being a central force to bring all these warring fiefdoms, one ruling king.
And so here's, forgive me for what I'm going to try to do here. So Gwynedd was one of them. Northumbria, Mercia, Wessex, Gwent, Dwyde, and then there's Powys. Are the different ones? Are the different parts of England and Scotland and everything that is Scotland?
If it's not Scottish, it's crap.
That's right.
Sorry. I really apologize. We're bad.
Oh, we're so bad. Get in my belly. baby back ribs.
So one of the other things I was like, how has Camelot, just the concept, how's it influenced the rest of the world? How's it influenced the rest of the world?
I think it has, for the simple reason is that, especially England.
Okay.
So you look at England, and what did they do after this? We're talking 17th century. Let's go anywhere from the 15th to 17th century.
Well, you got the expansion of the British Empire.
British Empire, people don't know how big that was. It was
huge.
It was basically probably a quarter or more.
Well, yeah. I mean, and look at how far it reached. Okay, so not only do you have the Americas, you know, at least as far as the Eastern Seaboard is concerned, right? New England, New Hampshire, New York, all those are based off of stuff in Britain.
Right.
Okay, that, and Western expansion continuing off there. Then you got Australia.
Right.
Falklands. All
India.
Oh, huge, huge reach there.
Right. And then we're talking Persia during the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're talking Africa, Egypt.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually covered more than Alexander the Great.
I believe it.
Yeah. So all that with Camelot as their background, is because they would, that's their military would act with.
For king and country.
Yeah, for king and country. We would say it's pompous, but to them, it's no, we have these rules that we must follow. It would be kind of cool when you're in service to actually have those rules and follow them. But
again, you got bogged down by the dogma that's built up around those precepts all the time.
Right.
I think that's where we run into problems all the time. If you look at the way that the chivalry, which is something that seems to be lost on a lot of modern day stuff, I don't know how any one of the, sorry, kids, I'm going to say it out there, but if you were on your phone, I'd slap that phone right out of there and probably chop off one of your fingers with a sword, because you're not paying attention or giving the way to a senior citizen or something like that.
Oh, no.
I mean, just common sense stuff. And people just blow past people, crash through doors and stuff like that.
My wife gets so upset with me because we'll go through and people just bump into me. I mean, and they know they're going to bump into me. Right. And we're moving over and they want to take all this space. And I'll just turn around and say, excuse you. And she's like, let's go. I said, no. I said, you know.
Acknowledgement. I need you to acknowledge the fact that you overstepped your boundary.
Right. I always when I open the doors, if there's a couple behind me, I leave the door open for them. You know, that's the right thing to do. Not close the door on them. I mean. Or cut them off, yeah.
That's a good one right there. It's like, come on, man. So there are a lot of really good things about having that, but you could only take that so far. You have to temper that with
courtesy.
Common courtesy.
Yeah.
Because you could overdo it one way or the other. I mean, it's meant as a guideline. It's the golden rule or anything like that. It's a guidepost. Bow to it if you have to, but sometimes you have to
bend
it.
It's where you're going to get back, where you get into something that that they say during this time is not that Rome was, it was pretty close to Roman Christianity during that time. So they say that Arthur was Christian, believed in Christ, all that. So that was really a push in that area. It was very strong. Now, again, we need to understand this is 508 AD.
Correct.
That's when the Romans were just kind of, you know.
They had to do the switch over.
Right.
Well,
they started back. They were backing off because of the Germanics and the, yeah.
They were pulling back. Rome had fallen in disrepair because of just, there were a lot of inbreeding with the emperor.
Yes.
Children and stuff like that. Watch I, Claudius. You'll get a good idea what's going on there. Ugh. Great series, great acting, but it gives kind of a basis what happened after Marcus Aurelius,
right?
Who's trying to bring the Republic back to Rome, and unfortunately, the emperors that followed after him wanted to keep that be the emperor, you know, through and through, and they would do it through their bloodlines and so on like that, as opposed to actually having the right man for the right job.
Yeah.
And look what happened. Complete shambles. Rome fell.
Well, that's
they were being besieged by so many different factions outside of Rome.
Right.
Until it actually got conquered.
And then Hannibal came in, and I think he's the final one that came in. I mean, the Germanics were coming down and they were like fighting a lot, but when Hannibal came, that was it.
Yeah, and then there was the conversion. So the Roman Empire still exists in a way, and that's known as the Vatican.
Right. And Roman Catholic, yes.
And they know a lot and have a lot of knowledge. They probably know where Excalibur is.
Well, I'm sure. Oh, it's probably in their archives.
You think?
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of things in their archives.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Maybe one day there'll be disclosure. Doubt it. Doubt it.
Well, there's going to be a new pope here pretty soon, so. Mm. But I doubt we'll change anything. I'll see what happens, because they might go, it depends if they're going to go back or forward. It depends where the pope's from.
It's always hard to say how that gets picked, you know, and, you know, Paul
right.
was the first of the popes, correct?
Right.
I've never had a chance to really delve into that part of history as far as things are. Sorry, I try to pull in as much history as I can and dig into it, but occasionally real life gets in the way of that kind of stuff, unfortunately.
It's so political. The church is so political. At one time, they had two popes, and that was, yes, one
really?
In France and one in Rome.
When in Rome, do as the Romans do. Well, I don't want to know about that, you know. Okay, Spartacus.
How do you like your cannoli?
Oh, my God.
We're going to go back now. One of the things I want to talk about is Merlin.
Oh, yeah. So here we have, you already mentioned it. So you have Arthur, who is supposedly depicted as a Christian, correct?
Right.
What is Merlin?
He's a wizard.
He's a druid.
Druid. Yes, he's a druid. Yeah.
He's
supposed to be they call him a hermit druid.
Hermit. It's a hermit druid. Call me Tim. But Merlin, you know, again, magician. He is a druid, nature-based stuff, counterposed to Christian.
Right.
This sets up a pretty interesting dichotomy, because apparently, according to some of the legends anyway, is that Merlin raised Arthur after he was born, because Uther Pendragon was killed.
And by the way, there was a Uther Pendragon. That's a true name.
So if Arthur is the son of Uther, then he could become king, and he could have been one of these chieftains and stuff like that. If you follow the movie of Excalibur and you were to believe the way that John Borman portrays it, Uther falls in love with, oh, I forget exactly who it is. He ends up bedding her, And subsequently afterwards, he's killed.
Yes.
And she gives birth to Arthur, and is, and somehow he is being raised by Merlin.
Right.
On one of the islands and stuff.
Because
like that.
The other king did not want him around.
Correct.
Because usually what happens is in hierarchy in England, especially in England, they come back and kill and they take over.
Yeah, if you're an heir to somebody, you better kill all the people that are associated with that individual.
There's so many stories about that in England.
You know what that reminds me of?
What?
This goes back to the primates. Hear me out.
Yes.
So you know what ends up happening is that if a male silverback gorilla comes across another male's gorilla's kids, he'll just whack them all.
Yeah.
And it's just like, wow, that's pretty primal right there.
Because they don't want that bloodline to go.
Exactly.
Weird. Wow.
Primates.
I wonder if Bigfoot does that. That'd be interesting.
Ooh, yeah. They don't like to be called big feet. Coming out there with the swords in their hands and stuff. It's like, ha-ha! For Britain! Ah! Stomp on you!
Oh, my God.
That went totally astray.
So, yes, it did. So he was a druid. He was an advisor. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they said. And then Morgan actually was part of the Healing Sisters.
Lefay?
Yeah. So they were the, like, prophets or healing sisters. So when he was injured, he went there. And that's how that's involved. What's the other ones involved? Lancelot, he was a French. Came from France.
Correct.
Galahad was his son.
Okay, so Paul posed this question earlier today, and I thought it was kind of an interesting one, too. So are you saying that Galahad is Lancelot and Guinevere's kid?
It could be.
Oh, boy, that would be what a reveal that would be at the round table.
So here's a... I have a list of them. Okay, first...
Hand me a slice of pizza, and it's like, what? He's your kid? Be gone. And take the pineapple with you.
These are the knights, the first 12 knights. Lancelot. Gawain. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Gawain.
Gawain who?
Gawain the tub, I'm drowning. Geraint. Percival. Bors the Younger. Lamorak. Kay Sir Gareth. Belvedere? Is that Bedivere?
Yep, Bedivere.
Oh, wow. This was, how do you pronounce that one? Gahis? Gahis?
Gahars?
Yeah. Galahad, and then Tristan.
I knew a Tristan, but that was a she.
That's right.
That'd be Dame Tristan. Sir Kay is actually, I believe, is Arthur's adoptive brother, if I remember correctly, right? And he'd always end up calling Arthur, at least in the White's book, referred to him as Newt.
Newt, yes.
All the time. Sir Bors the Younger. Where is Sir Bors the Elder? That's what I want to know. But Sir Percival? Yeah, Percival is pretty pivotal.
Is Percival the one in the Monty Python where he goes to the nunnery?
Get thee to... I think so.
We're here to save you. No, I don't need saving.
I need to be saved, and I've been bad and naughty, Zoot. I need a spanking. And I do, too.
So...
You have a wound. We must heal you.
Yes. So Camelot, they're saying, one book by Phillips is saying that it was Gawain. It's really a Celtic name, and I can't pronounce it's because during that time, wow, English was not the English that we have now.
Oh,
it was totally different. In fact, when we came over to the Americas, people didn't understand that it was a Germanic English that we spoke. It wasn't like thee and thou and everything that you think of the Mayflower was. No, it was a really weird language. But anyway, there's this really long thing, and they're saying that that was partly Arthur during that time, because it was like 490, 495 during that time. And he actually brought people together, brought the little, I don't know, then what countries, they were provinces together.
I'm going to throw this out there. So what if Arthur is actually a Viking?
Oh, wow.
I'm just throwing it out there because the Vikings were such a nomadic kind of race.
During that time.
And had sailed into the British Isles. They'd already definitely made headway in Scotland. Isn't much of a stretch that they would have a further stretch that you'd have one conquering guy or chieftain,
right,
come through and just whack all these Saxons or Picts,
right?
Which were like, I'm not sure exactly how the Picts are actually already in the Isles. They'd had to migrate over, like either by a land bridge or something like that,
right?
Like the Native Americans came across the ice bridge, went between Alaska and Russia, or
China. Well, if you look at what the Vikings did, or what's the other name for them? Saxons. They came in, and they actually, all the rivers that were in England, they traveled, and they went into London and actually devastated London. They were through the whole country.
They sacked it, as they like
sacked
to say.
It. Yes.
There's some terminology that has always thrown me off when I hear when I watch anything that comes in from Britain and stuff like that. Sometimes the language, though it's, you can hear them talking and stuff, occasionally there's a word that will throw you and catch you off guard as an American. And I'm sure there are words in American English that throws the Brits off as well. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? So I have a Scottish friend, another Paul. I have many friends named Paul. No offense.
No offense.
None taken. That should be you, not me. But my friend Paul Lang is from Edinburgh, and there's certain phrases that he can get away with that I could never, never use here, ever.
Especially the swear words.
Oh, and he swears a lot.
The C word is a common word over there. Where
correct.
Here, it was like, you said what?
You know, can't say that here.
Yeah.
The C word? Ooh, that's a major no-no.
Yeah.
But they'll throw the F word around like nobody's business, which is hilarious to listen to.
Especially the accent.
The accent makes it so perfect. I wish I could do that. I'm sure that to his Scottish ear, the American pronunciation of everything sounds funny to him. I'm sure of it. But we get along fine. Have a couple pints and we're fine.
So I'm gonna give a prediction.
Okay.
I say in the next 15 years, they find Camelot.
Really?
Yeah.
You know what? I'll go with that.
Because what this research, there's so much more research that's been happening. The only problem is money. You know, some of these people want to go and dig where they don't have the money, or they can't get the, you know, you got to have permits. You got to have all this stuff.
Permits.
Before you do all that. Okay. So I got to tell you, I wanted to work at James Madison Plantation.
Oh, okay.
And they have an archaeological dig, right? You have to pay to help them. It was like $350.
Why?
I don't know. And then you got to pay for your hotel, which is fine. I would have done that. But I would love to just go do that and be, you know, for free. Free help. But you got to pay. Because they don't have enough money to cover
so
all
their...
So
they're trying to fund it by you paying into it
right.
and helping out at the same...
Yeah.
Bad use of volunteers. Boo.
It's like somebody has the rights to certain songs that should be public.
I'm going to find the chalice, the Holy Grail, and take it for myself. Screw you guys. Drink of this cup. and you shall have everlasting life. I already have that going on. I don't need a cup.
Don't make the malice by putting the pill in the chalice. What? Yeah. I put the pill in the chalice and don't make malice. What?
My cup hasn't runneth over yet, but it's getting close.
I got to say this. So.
Oh, I was just thinking. So right now, going back to the archaeological stuff, right? So they've been finding some interesting stuff that's coming in the pyramids recently.
Oh,
have you heard about this?
Oh, we should talk about that soon.
That has got some crazy ground penetrating radar that I've seen some of the imagery that they're showing from this, and it's a
pillars.
Yeah,
but they're talking spiral. About spiral that there's like they're talking down. like stairs,
and then there's these two large.
I call them depositories. They could be. I mean, it's, rooms.
Two large buildings underneath these eight pillars, I guess they're talking about, underneath Giza. And it's just like, what does that mean? If they can use that kind of technology for underneath something that's been there for over 3,000 years or older, why couldn't you find something that was 500 years before? Just down the road.
Yeah.
Literally, you're shaving off literally like 3,500
years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's nothing. And they found, like we said, we found Troy. They found other things. There's some other ones they're finding too. It was one of the lost, they call it the lost tribe, but they found that. Oh, Gobi. Gobi.
In the desert? The Gobi Desert?
Yeah. They're finding stuff there. So
there's more stuff in the whole area of Egypt that's still covered up by the desert.
Yeah.
That they're starting to find periodically. You can only imagine in the Fertile Crescent, right around that general area, that hasn't been demolished by some group. There's probably still a bunch of stuff out there,
right,
in the high desert. And what can you find in South America that's covered up by all that vegetation?
So LIDAR, when they get LIDAR a little bit better, it's going to be amazing.
There's probably a bunch of stuff. And oh, my God. What would you find in Antarctica? There's another spot.
Well, they already talked about that is once that shelf came off, they found so much different species that was living in the water that it hasn't been seen. It's like, wow, okay.
I'm kind of curious if they're going to take a look at that Baltic anomaly and say, hey, look, there's an underwater Millennium Falcon down there.
Well, they have that large cave. They're still gone, and they were saying it was a bunker.
Well, what about?
We haven't heard much about that.
Well, what about the area that? Yeah, we're going way off track here.
That's fine.
But if you use that LIDAR, right, and if you go down to say the San Diego area, right around Santa Monica, where they supposedly has that drop off, and there's like these caves, underwater and stuff like that. It's like,
remember, at a certain time, it was 300 feet down.
Correct.
And 300 feet is the size of what, the Empire State Building?
That'd be about right.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot down. So when we talk about LIDAR, now, I think what they haven't done in England is they might have used LIDAR, but I think because of money-wise, they haven't done a lot of research. A lot of people are not into the author thing, you know, that where Camelot and stuff like that. But it'd be interesting. I think it's really interesting. They should find it. It's part of history.
Well, and here's, you know, they've already found that below certain objects, say like the Easter Island heads, there's actually bodies underneath that ground that holds those guys up in place.
They just found that out.
What about the structures that are already up above, say like Stonehenge, for example?
Right.
There's another one that is like, why don't you go down and take a look at that? Maybe we should get them to do some more LIDAR and take a look at Tesla's Wycliffe setup, right?
Oh, that'd be interesting. Ooh. You know it's off. It's yeah. You can't go near it with something like that. They're going, no, uh-uh.
Nah, you can't. No. Why? Why?
So,
hey, let's get Christopher Walken to play Tesla.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, I got electricity. Bzap. Ow. My God, it hurts. Painful.
Oh,
hair standing on end like a dog. Keep that balloon away from me.
Just rub it on your head. Oh, look.
Static cling.
We got off again, but that's because we like to have fun. That's as far as we can go with the Arthur thing in Camelot. Now, there was a thing about Kennedy's, when he's president, about being said about Camelot, and that comes from Jackie Onassis, or it was Jackie Kennedy at the time.
Correct.
After he died, she compared it to Camelot. And then time took it off, and then it's like, the Kennedy era.
Or something like that.
Yeah, dynasty. Because he had a lot of power and stuff. But I got to tell you, the really important stuff that happened, like Medicare and everything else, is Lyndon B. Johnson. He really went through, it was started, but he went through and finished a lot of stuff up, which is very interesting of some of the things he did in a short period.
Politics has always been the weird things, but when you're dealing with the presidencies back in the 60s and stuff after Eisenhower, right? There's such a weird thing. So when I became aware of any of the presidents or something like that, Nixon was the one who was being brought up on charges,
right?
And all that kind of stuff with the Watergate stuff, and that was a huge. The whole country was just a shitter of a place.
Well, Kennedy only beat him by 1.5 points or something like that, 1.5% or something.
He
like
had
that.
Jack had the charisma,
right?
But Nixon had a lot of the political stuff correct,
right?
The way he wanted to run it after serving as vice president under Eisenhower,
right?
I believe, right? For whatever reason, they were butting heads because one got ousted because of the other, because of popularity versus actual votes.
Right.
Or something along the popular vote versus.
So the other thing about the Kennedy thing was, like, he had like his Knights of the Round Table. You know, he had his brother. He had McNamara. I think he had McNamara
yep.
there. He had some really and he stood up to people. I mean, look at the missile crisis. I mean, he stood up and did a lot of stuff. We're finding out more about him as things going on, especially him in Maryland, his infidelity and stuff like that. But yeah, I could see why they can compare it.
Do LSD?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, he was on painkillers.
I had heard that.
Yeah, that's the rocking
because
chair.
Because of his wartime injuries and so on like
right,
that.
Right, that's why he had the rocking chair in the Oval Office, and he'd rock in it because of his bad back. So, yeah, he couldn't sit in the regular chair, not for very long.
I don't know. Well, who is his Merlin, then? If you're going to okay one with the other.
Secretary of State was also McNamara. Who's the other one? He had a couple that were really smart. Good question. I would say either McNamara or Bobby.
So, popular culture? I will say that there is talk of Avalon.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, which I had heard might be the place for Camelot.
Or where he was buried at.
And the group known as Roxy Music had their last album called Avalon. Which shows a knight with a falcon on his
right.
on his gloved hand facing out towards a palatial lake and everything. It was beautiful. Great album, by the way. If you haven't listened to it, it's awesome. But Brian Ferry went on further on to do some great stuff on top of that.
Like we said, they're in England. They have celebrations every year in all these little townships.
Hamlets.
And they're big. They're huge. In fact, they said one city is, one hamlet is like 12,000 people, but they get million people a year come in there. Because of the Arthur stories and stuff.
Oh, really?
Cool. That's a lot of people.
Arthur does good for business.
Yes, he does. And it may not even have anything to do with the history of it, but they have it. The priory that was said that they had found the bones.
Oh,
And then they found something else. They said they found a saint. What's the Irish saint?
Was it Patrick?
St. Patrick. They found St. Patrick on their priory, and they all know that, And they said, well, we got the bones and stuff. And they go, no, we got, and they go, we have the bones. What are you talking about? And they found another one that they had in London. They had the bones there. They were saying they were finding all this stuff. Whether they were doing it, people come and.
He drove the serpents out of there. So does that make St. Patrick a Palladian guy from the stars and drove off the lizard people out of there? I'm just throwing that one out there.
Is that why Harry Potter does not go to Ireland?
But he can speak parcel tongue.
Well, you get scared out. You'd be chased out. I kind of like the lizard talk.
Oh, though. Man. Come on. The basilisk is a giant snake that turned you to stone. I always thought it was something else in D&D, but that's maybe just me.
Oh, so we're bringing up that.
Sorry, I'm bringing up some crazy stuff now.
This is good. It's a good thing because they said that Merlin in his thing brought out two dragons. That there was one dragon. He brought another dragon out, and they fought, and his dragon won. This is that's part of the story.
Well, that's like a double helix thing, ain't it?
Yeah.
And then at that point, you're saying that Merlin's a. He's not only a magician and an alchemist, but he's also some sort of a genetically trained doctor.
Yeah. So that's I mean, there's so many stories that they end up reading into it. People take it for what it's worth, but then when they start dissecting it and reading what it means, is different.
Well, take a look at the Daceus that doctors use for the medical facility. They have two snakes coming up around the center of that thing, right?
Yeah.
And Mercury usually carries that with him.
Right.
There's some stuff going on there.
Yeah, well.
Just saying.
You said Mercury. They used to put Mercury on pillows.
What?
To get rid of bed bugs.
Did a lot more to people.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy.
They had DDT wallpaper.
To quote Johnny Carson, that's some wild and wacky stuff.
So we're towards the end of this, and we just got to say that it's still up in the air.
I would hazard a guess that if you use that LIDAR or LIDAR stuff that
right.
you were talking about for the stuff that's taking place in Egypt. If you were to put it to the London British Isles and look for that, I bet you would find something that would show that there was something major going on there.
I think so. I think they'll find past Roman facilities. Even if it was a wood facility, you'd still have something there. You could tell there's something built there. Because of wall, traffic or whatever go through it. So, yeah, I think it'd be great.
I'm all for it, man.
So, yeah. You can always send us money. We can do that, and we can go take our trip and do that for everybody.
Stay away from characters named Mordred, by the way. They're just bad for you, man.
Oh, yeah. He actually killed King Arthur in the battle.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
But they also think that maybe he did, that Arthur did not die during that battle. Still alive.
Oh, they buried him underneath Glastonbury Hill or Avalon. And,
yes.
He'll come back when Britain needs him.
Yes, we're doing, yeah. That's a great song.
Love it. Love it. Anyway.
So, this is Paul.
And this is Alan.
And we're going to say bye.
Bye. Bye, and I hope you enjoyed this show. Yay.